All right, ready to dive in. Today we're tackling something big. Literally, we're talking about sustainability in the UK's built environment.
Yeah, that's buildings, roads, bridges, you name it.
The whole shebang. I guess when I think sustainability, it's usually recycling, driving electric, that sort of thing.
Makes sense.
But buildings, not something I'd think of as a big environmental
No,
factor.
they absolutely are. This book we're looking at today really lays it out. The built environment, it's a huge resource consumer, big contributor to greenhouse gases.
Okay, yeah.
And then on top of that, all the waste it generates, mountains of it.
So it's like this hidden giant right under our noses, not something you'd immediately think of.
Exactly. And the UK set this goal, pretty ambitious one. Net zero carbon emissions by 2050.
Net zero by 2050, that's a big target. What's standing in their way? What are the biggest challenges?
Well, one the book really highlights is the UK's existing buildings. Many are old, right? Some are historically important. They weren't built with energy efficiency in mind.
Not as simple as what? Slapping some solar panels on and calling it a day.
Not quite. Retrofitting older buildings to meet modern standards, well, it gets complex and expensive. Insulation, heating systems, windows, it's a whole process.
And on top of that, I imagine there are also some issues within the construction industry itself.
For sure. The book mentions a shortage of skilled workers. People trained in sustainable building practices, there just aren't enough. And sourcing eco-friendly materials, that can be tricky too.
I can see that.
Like, imagine the demand for those materials goes way up, but the supply chains aren't ready.
Bottleneck.
Exactly. And then there's this balancing act, right? New development versus protecting the environment. Nobody wants green spaces paved over for another shopping mall.
Yeah, makes sense.
Finding that sweet spot where we grow sustainably but don't sacrifice what's already there, that's a tough one.
Definitely sounds complicated. More than just good intentions, there are real obstacles in the way.
Yeah, but the book doesn't just focus on the problems, thankfully. It also looks at some pretty innovative solutions that are being developed and used.
Oh, okay, now we're talking. What kind of solutions have you excited for?
One that seems really promising is decarbonizing the built environment.
Okay.
Basically, it's cutting down how much we rely on fossil fuels, in construction and even just in how buildings run day to day.
So less coal and gas, more renewables like solar and wind.
Exactly. The book talks about incorporating those things into buildings, but it also really stresses reducing energy consumption in the first place.
So it's not just switching energy sources, but actually using less energy overall.
Yes, precisely. And that leads into another interesting concept, green building standards. Familiar with LE or passive house?
LED, yeah, rings a bell. I think I saw an article about some eco-friendly skyscraper with that. But passive house, new one for me.
Right, so LED, that's Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design. It's a rating system.
Yeah.
Basically certifies buildings based on how environmentally friendly they are.
So, like getting an A plus for being green?
Yeah, pretty much. Passive house is different. It's a really strict standard focused on creating buildings that use super low energy. They're so well insulated, airtight, they barely need any heating or cooling.
So, passive house buildings are like the energy saving ninjas of the construction world. But I imagine there are trade-offs, right? Like, wouldn't that level of efficiency be super expensive to build?
You'd think so, right? Well, the book actually looks at a case study. They compare a LED certified office building to a passive house school in similar climates. The results are interesting.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Tell me more about this head to head.
As you might expect, yeah, the initial cost for the passive house school was higher. But long term, that school actually saved more money on energy bills than the LE office building, and its carbon footprint was way lower.
So even though passive house might cost more upfront, it's better for your wallet and the environment in the long run.
Exactly. And that case study really shows a core principle of sustainable construction. Thinking about the whole life cycle of a building, from the materials used all the way to its demolition or reuse.
Speaking of materials, what does the book say about choosing sustainable options for construction?
It gets into this process called life cycle assessment, LCA for short. It's basically analyzing the environmental impact of a material throughout its entire life.
Cradle to grave.
Exactly. So it takes into account things like resource extraction, manufacturing, transportation, how it's used, even how it's disposed of. There's an example in the book, construction project, where they were deciding between traditional concrete or a newer, greener alternative made with recycled materials.
I'm guessing the recycled material won, hands down.
Actually, not so simple. The LCA showed the recycled material had lower emissions during manufacturing, but transporting it to the site, much more energy intensive. So overall impact. Pretty similar for both.
So sometimes the greenest choice isn't as clear-cut as it seems. It's about looking at the whole picture, not just making assumptions. What else does the book talk about in terms of making smarter choices?
Well, it goes beyond just the environmental impact. Durability, how long it lasts, can you reuse it, recycle it at the end of its life? Those things are all important too. Thinking long-term, minimizing waste. It's about resource efficiency.
It sounds like we're moving away from that old take, make, dispose model and towards something more circular. Is that something the book digs into?
Definitely. There's a whole chapter on the circular economy.
Okay, I've heard the term, but gotta admit, not entirely sure what it means in practice. Can you break it down?
Sure. A circular economy aims to basically eliminate waste by keeping resources in use for as long as possible, closing the loop instead of that traditional linear model.
So instead of demolishing a building and sending everything to a landfill, we find ways to reuse, repurpose, recycle as much as possible.
Exactly. And it goes beyond just the materials themselves. Imagine buildings designed to be easily taken apart, so components can be reused in new structures. Or even leasing building materials instead of buying, so they can be returned and refurbished.
Wow, that's a completely different way of thinking about building. It's like instead of owning a car, you use a ride-sharing service. Access over ownership. What kind of impact could that have?
Oh, it could be huge, truly transformative. The book says a circular economy could drastically cut waste and emissions, create new business opportunities, even boost the economy. But of course, there are challenges.
What are some of the things standing in the way of making this happen?
One big one is just a mindset shift. The whole construction industry, architects, engineers, contractors, everyone needs to start thinking differently, seeing buildings as material banks for the future, not just temporary things that'll be demolished.
So it's not just about the technology or materials, but a change in how people approach the whole process. What other challenges are there?
Honestly, we need better regulations and incentives. Right now, it's often cheaper and easier to just demolish a building and start over than to deconstruct it and salvage stuff.
So we need policies that make it more financially attractive to choose the circular route.
Absolutely. Tax breaks for using recycled materials, penalties for sending waste to landfills, that kind of thing.
It sounds like a pretty big system overhaul, but are there any projects out there already doing this, putting these ideas into practice?
Oh, yeah, there are. And the book highlights some really inspiring case studies.
Okay, I'm ready to hear about these pioneers who are leading the way. What have they been up to?
One that caught my eye is a housing development in the Netherlands, designed for complete disassembly. All the parts are connected with screws and bolts, no permanent adhesives, so they can be taken apart and reused.
Like a giant Lego set. You can just take it apart and build something new with the same pieces.
Exactly. And they chose materials for their durability. So they estimate over 90% of the building can be reused for new projects.
That's incredible. Proof that you can build for the present and the future. Any other examples?
There's this commercial building in London. They're trying out a material leasing model. Instead of buying things like carpets, flooring, even some interior walls, they're leasing them from the manufacturers.
So it's like subscribing to a flooring service instead of buying a rug.
Exactly. At the end of the lease, the manufacturer takes the stuff back, fixes it up, and leases it to someone else. Keeps the materials circulating, less waste.
It's amazing to see these principles in action. But how do we make this kind of thinking more common?
That's the big question. The book argues we need a few things to happen.
All right, what are the key ingredients?
First, strong government policies, things that encourage these practices and make it more competitive with traditional methods.
So like tax breaks, subsidies for recycled materials, maybe even regulations on how much construction waste can be sent to landfills?
Yes. We also need to invest in R&D, create new circular building materials and technologies.
So not just using what we have, but actually innovating, coming up with new solutions.
Right. And finally, we need to raise awareness. The more people demand sustainable and circular buildings, the more pressure there is on the industry to actually deliver.
It sounds like we all have a role to play in making this happen. But before we dive into what consumers can do, let's zoom out a bit and talk about urban planning. How does that factor into creating a more sustainable built environment?
Oh, good point. It's all connected. The way we design our cities has a huge impact. The book talks about creating cities that are compact, walkable, so we're not so reliant on cars and can use public transport more.
So cities where you don't need to own a car.
Yeah.
Where you can walk, bike, or take the bus or train most places.
Exactly. And it's not just transport. The book also highlights the need for green spaces in urban areas.
Parks, trees, community gardens, that kind of thing.
Yes. They make cities more beautiful, more livable. But they also help with climate change, reducing the heat island effect, absorbing rainwater, and improving air quality.
So it's about building green buildings and creating green cities.
Exactly. And that leads us to another important idea the book explores, social sustainability.
Okay, I've heard the term, but I'm not sure what it means in this context. Can you explain?
Sure. It's about making sure our buildings and cities aren't just environmentally sustainable, but also socially just and equitable.
So making sure everyone benefits, not just a select few.
Precisely. Affordable housing, access to good education and healthcare, fostering community, it's all part of it.
It's like sustainability isn't just about the planet, it's also about people.
Exactly. Environmental sustainability and social justice, they go hand in hand.
This is all fascinating. It feels like we've just scratched the surface.
Oh yeah, there's a lot more. The book also looks at some exciting innovations that are shaping the future of sustainable construction.
Okay, you've got my attention. What are some of the game-changing technologies that have you excited about the future of building?
Well, one area that's really taking off is smart technology in buildings. We've all heard of smart homes, but this book takes it to the next level. It talks about smart buildings, buildings that can monitor and optimize everything from energy use to air quality, even how space is used.
Okay, so it's like a building that's basically one giant computer. Constantly analyzing data, making adjustments, being as efficient as possible. That sounds pretty futuristic.
It is. And some of the tech is already out there, like sensors that track how many people are in a room and adjust the lighting and ventilation, save energy when the space isn't being used.
Yeah, that makes sense. Why heat and light an empty room? But isn't there a bit of a worry with all this data collection, you know, Big Brother watching you in these smart buildings?
That's a valid concern, and the book does talk about the need to address privacy issues, but it also argues that this data can be really valuable for making buildings more sustainable and responsive to the people in them.
So it's finding that balance, right?
Yeah.
Innovation, but used responsibly. What other cool tech does the book look at?
Well, one that really caught my eye was 3D printing in construction.
Whoa, 3D printed houses. That sounds like something out of sci-fi.
I know, right? But it's becoming more and more feasible to create building components, even entire houses.
That's amazing. How does that connect to sustainability?
One of the big pluses is waste reduction. Traditional construction, you have a lot of leftover materials, landfill stuff. With 3D printing, you only use what you need. So much less waste.
That's really cool. And I bet it opens up a lot of creative possibilities, right?
Yeah.
No more being limited by standard building materials.
Exactly. The book has some incredible examples of 3D printed structures with intricate designs, stuff you couldn't make with traditional methods.
So are we going to see cities entirely 3D printed someday? Robots just roaming around, extruding concrete, making buildings?
It's not impossible. The book suggests it could be a game changer, especially for affordable, sustainable housing in fast-growing cities.
I can see that. But what about jobs? What happens to construction workers if robots are doing the building?
That's a real concern. And the book talks about the potential impact on jobs. But it also points out that new tech creates new opportunities. You'll need people to design, operate, and maintain those 3D printing systems. A whole new set of skills will be needed.
So it's less about robots taking over, more about people and robots working together in new ways.
Exactly. It's about adapting and using tech to make a more sustainable and fairer built environment.
Okay, so smart buildings, 3D printing, what else is on the horizon?
One area I find really fascinating is bio-based building materials. Nature's been building sustainable structures for millions of years, right? We're just starting to learn from it.
That's true.
Think bamboo, hemp, even mushrooms. They can all be used to create strong, durable, sustainable building products.
Wait, mushroom buildings? I've got to hear more about that.
It's pretty amazing stuff. There's this company developing building blocks from mycelium. That's the root structure of mushrooms. They're lightweight, fire-resistant, and even biodegradable. And you can grow them into specific shapes, so no waste.
Wow, that's like growing a house instead of building it. This whole idea of learning from nature for construction is so cool. What other bio-based materials are out there?
Well, bamboo is a classic example.
Yeah.
It's incredibly strong, grows super fast, very renewable resource. And hemp is gaining popularity too. Hemp fibers can be used for insulation, concrete-like blocks, even biodegradable plastics.
It's like we're moving toward buildings that are more connected to nature, the way they're designed and the materials they use.
Exactly. And the book makes the point that this connection to nature, it's good for the planet, but it's also good for us.
How so?
Being in nature is good for our health and well-being. Studies show it can lower stress, improve mood, even boost cognitive function.
So designing buildings that incorporate nature could make us happier and healthier.
That's the idea. It's called biophilic design, bringing natural elements into the built environment. Natural light, plants, water features, using natural materials like wood and stone inside.
I love that. It's like bringing the outdoors in. So it's not just about efficiency, it's about making spaces that nourish us.
Right. And it brings us back to social sustainability. Creating buildings that are good for the environment and good for people. That's crucial for a truly sustainable future.
Okay, so we've covered a lot here. High tech, nature-inspired materials, social equity. What are some of the key takeaways from the book about how we can actually make this vision a reality?
Well, the book stresses that it's going to take everyone working together. Governments need to put policies in place that encourage sustainable building. Businesses need to invest in new technologies and materials. And individuals, we need to make conscious choices about the buildings we live and work in.
So it's not about waiting for someone else to fix it. It's on all of us to take responsibility and act.
Absolutely. And one of the most powerful things individuals can do is advocate for change. Talk to your elected officials, support businesses that are doing the right thing, educate yourself and others.
So use our voices, our choices, to create demand for sustainable solutions.
Exactly. The more people demand it, the faster it'll happen.
Yeah. This has been such an inspiring conversation. I'm feeling a lot more hopeful about the future of building. What about you? What are you most excited about?
That's a good question. I think what gets me most fired up is the potential for regenerative buildings.
Regenerative buildings? What does that mean?
Imagine structures that don't just minimize their impact, but actually help restore and regenerate the ecosystems around them.
Whoa, that's a big idea. Buildings that give back to the planet, not just take from it.
It's ambitious, but I think it's possible. We're already seeing buildings with green roofs that help with rainwater and reduce the heat island effect. Buildings designed with facades that actually purify the air.
That's incredible. It's like turning buildings into part of the solution, not the problem.
Exactly. And I think as we learn more from nature and use new technologies, we'll see even more amazing examples of this. Buildings that are not just sustainable, but actually help make the planet a better place.
That's a future I want to be part of. And for our listeners, I encourage you to join us on this journey. Learn about the cool things happening, advocate for change, and let's build a future where our buildings and nature work together.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's a team effort. Everyone has a part to play.
This deep dive has given us a lot to think about. But before we move on, I want to leave you with one question. What's one small thing you can do in your own life today to support a more sustainable built environment?
It could be something simple. Switching to energy-efficient light bulbs, walking or biking instead of driving sometimes.
Or even just being more aware of the materials you use, the waste you produce. Every little bit makes a difference. But for now, we need to take a quick break to gather our thoughts. We'll be right back with some inspiring case studies that bring all these ideas to life. Stick around.
All right, welcome back. Those case studies, I'm eager to hear about them. What are some projects that really showcase these ideas in action? Okay, well, one that really stands out is the Bullitt Center. It's in Seattle. It's been called like the world's greenest office building. And it's aiming for this certification, the Living Building Challenge.
Living Building Challenge. That sounds pretty hardcore. How's it different from APE or Passive House?
It's even tougher. A living building, it has to make all its own energy from renewables, capture and clean all its own water. And it can only use non-toxic materials. The idea is it functions like a flower. You know, giving back to the environment, not taking away.
Wow, that's a high bar to clear. Yeah. So does the Bullitt Center actually manage all that?
Pretty close, yeah. It's got a huge solar array on the roof, rainwater harvesting, composting toilets that make fertilizer. And it's built with super energy efficient everything.
So it's like a self-sustaining little ecosystem right there in the city.
Exactly. And they actually track the building's performance publicly. So you can see how much energy it's making, how much water it's saving, all that.
Total transparency, that's cool. A great way to show people it can be done. Any other examples that stand out?
Yeah, there's the Bosco Verticale in Milan.
Oh, yeah, the vertical forest. I've seen pictures, those towers with trees and plants all over the balconies.
That's it. Really shows what biophilic design can do. Those towers have something like 900 trees and thousands of other plants.
A mini forest in the sky? But I imagine it must be a nightmare to keep all those plants alive up there.
Well, it takes work, for sure, but the benefits are worth it. The plants help insulate the building, they clean the air, they even bring in birds and insects. Creates a little ecosystem.
That must be a cool place to live. Get your nature fix right outside your door. But these are both pretty fancy projects, you know? What about more everyday buildings like schools or hospitals? Are there examples of sustainability in those kinds of places?
Oh yeah, for sure. There's this hospital in Singapore, Kuo Tek Phuet Hospital. It's designed as hospital in a garden.
Hospital in a garden. I like that.
Yeah, green spaces all through the building, courtyards with plants and water, rooftop gardens, even green walls to clean the air. They found that patients recover faster, feel less stressed when they have access to nature.
That makes sense. It's like nature itself helps you heal. Any examples that really show that social sustainability angle? You know, projects that are not just green, but also focus on community and equity.
Definitely. One that impressed me is the Edible Schoolyard Project, started in Berkeley, California.
Edible schoolyard. What's that all about?
They've got gardens and kitchens right there in the schools. Kids learn how to grow food, cook healthy meals, connect with nature.
That's awesome. Hands-on sustainability education. What a great way to teach those lessons.
Right. And it's not just about food. They also focus on community and social justice, making sure all the kids have access to healthy food, no matter what their background is.
It's like a perfect example of how sustainability can be a force for good in society.
Exactly.
Huh?
And it shows that positive change can happen anywhere, from a single home to a whole community.
This has been an inspiring conversation, I gotta say. I'm feeling a lot more hopeful about things. How about you? What are your main takeaways from all this?
You know, I think the biggest thing for me is realizing that we can create a sustainable built environment. We have the tools, we have the knowledge. What we need is the will to do it. And I think that starts with changing how we think, seeing buildings not as these isolated things, but as parts of a bigger ecosystem.
Buildings as nature, not buildings versus nature. And it's cool to see that happening already, from fancy skyscrapers to school gardens.
Yeah, and the book's message is hopeful, for sure. We're at this important point, and we have a real chance to create a future where buildings are not just practical, but actually make the planet a better place.
That's a future I want to be a part of. So, listeners, I encourage you to stay curious, keep learning, join the movement. Every little bit makes a difference.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
And until next time, keep building a better future.